back with episode 516 of The Critical Myth and the first show of 2015. Joining me tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, who finally knows what time as a flat circle looks like.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, who finally finished the Game of Thrones books! Hooray!
And this is Bronson from Australia, who's kind of amazed that Martin Freeman could do in 10 episodes what Bryan Cranston did in 5 years.
And all I can say is that, yeah, you know what, it may be 2015, but oddly enough, it's just like 1966. I'm not sure what that's all about. It's really very, very strange. Anyway, we are catching up on an awful lot of things from, what, like 2 weeks ago, but it feels like about a month?
Yeah.
I don't know. There hasn't been a whole lot on, but there have been a whole lot of other things going on, like holidays and films and everything else, and miniseries and what have you. Before we really get started too far, guys, I just wanted to know, you know, how your holidays went. How about you, Gary?
Oh, they were nice. We've been traveling the last several years, and this year we were actually home and stayed and met with friends, and it did give me a chance to do a lot of book reading, catch a few movies, and do some geeking out with my kids. So overall, you know, a nice holiday. I think the geekiest thing I got for Christmas was I got all the recordings from the 1964 World's Fair rides, so that's kind of geeky. And my gift for myself was my Green Lantern power battery, but that was my own gift. So.
Anything else go on over the holidays worthy of note?
Not that I can think of offhand.
Okay. Bronstom, how about you?
It was a relatively ordinary holiday period, which is to say that something like 40 plus of my relatives all converged on Wollongong for the big family Christmas for only the second time in a row. The relatives converging on Wollongong included me, since I no longer live there. It was pretty normal. The weather has for about a month, pretty much right up until the new year, has been completely, I don't want to say bipolar, but I'm struggling to think of a better term. It just cannot make up its mind what it wants to be. It'll be boiling hot, you know, 1 hour, thunderstorming the next. Though since the new year started, it's just decided to settle on boiling hot all the time, which I'm not as enthused about as others are.
Hmm. Well, that's unfortunate. how about you, Edmund?
Yeah, no, I've had a very nice holidays, and in that classic fashion of you never, some of the things in your community you never really do until someone else comes to visit. With my mother here for the holidays, I could now finally, after more than a decade in this area, actually let people know that, yes, the view from the Blue Ridge Parkway is absolutely stunning, especially when you pick a day that's nice and clear. And other than that, I just had a nice time catching some of the holiday movies and holiday specials, and generally relaxing and enjoying being with family.
Absolutely. That's been my last couple of weeks. I've actually been off from work since the last time we recorded, which is why it probably feels like it's been about a month. Still doesn't feel quite long enough, actually, but there we are. Very little travel, thankfully, just a lot of hanging out with the family, spending time here at home, doing a few things, but kind of decompressing from a very long year. I got a couple movies in, but, you know, we'll be talking about at least one of those. I guess that's as good as an introduction as we need right now. I'm sure that we'll talk a little bit more about things as we go along. Edmund, why don't you give a disclaimer for whatever else we're going to talk about?
Certainly. The rest of this episode? Absolutely. Any of the things we talk about, we like to talk about just about anything that happened in them. So if you haven't been around us before, you need to know now that you will be absolutely spoiled about what happens. So as ever, especially when we've been off for a while, we've tried to give you at least a week or two to catch up on all these wonderful things. But before we do that to you.
Mm-hmm. I don't want this to be too, off balance here. Gary gave us kind of his, like, you know, favorite gift or gift of note. We got to be fair play here. Bronson, how about you? I guess he needs to think a little bit more.
My audio cut out for a tick there.
I was going to say, what is the gift of note for this holiday season?
Oh, aside from the gift of continued poor internet, apparently, it's hard to pick one. There's one or two I can't talk about for reasons that will become clear at some point. Possibly one of my favorites is the 750 milliliter flask I received. Standard issue Dragon Con equipment, apparently.
Keep it in good shape.
Yes, I have a fiance who knows me very well.
How about you, Edmund?
Well, this actually was one of those Christmases where I didn't really get a lot of geeky stuff, but I'm continuing my coffee education since having gotten the fancier grinder in the last year or so. I now have the French press to go with it, so I can start experimenting with different grind levels.
Very nice, very nice. And let's see, here on this end, we got quite a bit of geeky stuff, but I'm trying to think of the one that probably is of greatest note. Actually, I'll go completely off the normal type of thing here and talk about, I got a kind of sweatshirt, but it clasps magnetically, and it also has a flap across your face so that, of course, it's good for, you know, colder weather, but it just happens to make you look like you're a ninja. So that was a particularly fond gift this year.
Defected from the assassins?
No, oh, more boy. Just specialized.
They're not going to be happy.
Heads are going to roll, possibly yours.
Just keep an eye out for
determination
plans in the next year. Let's put it that way.
the termination plan is about as literal as it sounds.
Yeah, the terms, I'm sure, are not as good as they might seem. As I said, just keep your eye on announcements for the next year or so. Anyway, let's see. Let's go ahead then into some of the news. There's really not a lot of news. I was a little surprised. I think 2 weeks, oh, there's got to be plenty to talk about. Not really. And two of them are kind of related in a very strange way. But, Gary, why don't you take this first one here?
Oh, sure. We're talking about yet another Marvel movie announcement. Actor Mike Coulter is going to star as Luke Cage in Marvel's AKA Jessica Jones. Now, this is going to be it's not a movie, but more of a miniseries that Netflix is going to be putting out next year after they're done with their Daredevil series. And it's basically about the story of Jessica Jones, who meets Luke Cage, and it starts to reveal, you know, secrets about both of them. This follows, for people who follow the comic books with Jessica Jones, I believe this is starting off where she's in her detective phase. This is, you know, after she's left formal superheroing and is trying to make a go of it as a private detective. So it's a gritty way to go about it, and probably saves us on special effects, I imagine. But I'm always curious when I hear things like this of what power levels both of these characters are going to be at, given they've played at least Luke Cage is bordering on Hulk-like powers at this point in stage. So I'm wondering where they're going to place him power-wise. I hope they keep him a little bit more down to earth.
Well,
it's also a bit of a significant announcement, because I can't see any particular mention of it in the article, but as far as I know, Luke Cage is one of the characters who was also getting I mean, theoretically, this means he's getting, like, whether they wind up doing it, he's... So it's a pretty decent, it's a decently fast announcement.
Yeah, I'll translate that slightly due to the typical Australian kayaking service trying to pass it on to us.
Yeah, please translate the Australian for us. Go.
Yeah. Basically, Luke Cage is supposed to get his own miniseries, so it'll be interesting to see whether or not that's going to still be happening. But if it does, this looks like it's them once again kind of layering their casting as they go into production with various shows. Because, I mean, this is supposed to interface with Daredevil, and then presumably Luke Cage's series. And then I think there was a fourth one out there, which I can't remember who it was supposed to be offhand. But then all of them are supposed to then...
Iron Fist,
thank you. And they're supposed to combine into a Defenders miniseries. All of this is supposed to be in the same cinematic universe as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the MCU films.
And this is all done through Netflix?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's a lot of programming.
Huh. It is. And so I'm guessing that the way that it's kind of parsing out right now, the fact that they're, I believe, already filming the Daredevil series, but they're also casting for Jessica Jones and presumably Luke Cage, that they're kind of going sequential to a certain extent, but they're keeping a good flow, or they're preparing a good flow. as the case may be, good to see that the casting continues and that the project is still going forward. How much of that is going to intersect with the films is a very good question, as I believe the Netflix stuff is all kind of supposed to be based roughly in Hell's Kitchen, or at least Manhattan. So, we'll see. Bronstom, if you don't mind taking kind of both of these, I guess?
I will certainly try, my current internet connection notwithstanding. So, there's been a few announcements about the upcoming... The upcoming Star Trek film, the sequel to the 2008 Star Trek and 2012 Star Trek Into Darkness. Roberto Orci had initially been announced as the director, but he was recently he recently quit or was chucked. It was announced that Justin Lin, best known for doing the a bunch of the Fast and Furious films, has taken over as the director. We've just recently had some news about it. The first is that the Paramount has set a premiere date of July 8th, 2016. Mm. Not having consulted the Marvel and DC calendars, I'm not sure what kind of films it's going to be going up against. So that means that this is the, it'll be a 4-year delay from one Star Trek film to the next, much like the, Into Darkness was after the 2008 film.
Oh, good. We'll have recasting soon.
It's also been announced that, Roberto Orci, after he left the director's chair, he's also leaving the writerly duty, the script, whatever he'd written so far for the film. Apparently, they're not going to be using it. He's still on credit as a producer, apparently, but that's about it. A couple of the assistants, just the co-writers of the film who joined last year, specifically J.D. Payne and Patrick McKay, will probably be the ones. Finishing up the script that they'll be using. As for the film itself, I don't think we know much about actual content at this point, although hopefully it'll definitely follow up on the 5-year mission. Mind some of that goodness?
Yeah, I'm somewhat concerned at this point, because along with all of this, there were some rumblings, and it wasn't an article per se, but rather kind of buried here and there in other articles. There was this rumor that what Paramount was trying to do was they saw how well the Guardians of the Galaxy did, and they attributed this at least partially to how well the characters of Groot and Rocket were perceived. And they looked at the Star Trek franchise that has been going on since 2009 or so, and they said, hey, you know, Scotty's got this sidekick. We should probably make that more prominent because that will be, you know, a great way to capitalize on this whole interest in Rocket and Groot and so forth, because we've got a character just like that waiting right here. Why haven't we been already capitalizing on something like this? And my gut feeling is that the purge of the kind of Abrams guard out of the writer's room and this you know, now we have new director, new writers. I have a feeling that they are being asked to radically retool what their plans were. Not that it's necessarily a problem when it comes to the 5-year mission being a relatively open book. So whether they go one direction or another probably doesn't matter in the long run. There's no huge continuity to worry about right now. But I am somewhat concerned that there is more studio interference in this film than perhaps initially would have been the case. And maybe this is the downside to the popularity of Guardians of the Galaxy, if this is indeed at all true. Anyone else kind of getting some bad vibes about this, the state of the film right now?
I honestly haven't followed much of the production stuff. It wouldn't surprise me to learn that the studios are trying to go back to the drawing board on their sci-fi franchises and trying to capitalize on the popularity of Guardians. It's a shame that there was back when the news was coming out about who was going to be the director after Roberto Orci dropped out, a few names were being tossed about, and I think Justin Lin was the one that I was least favorable towards, looking at his body of work. Easily my favorite of the names that they were throwing out was apparently Duncan Jones was being seriously considered for the director's chair, and that would have been awesome because if you've not seen the film Moon, it's absolutely brilliant, and I thought that Source Code, which he was more of a Hollywood hired gun on, he was still damn good. He did a great job of making that exciting and interesting, and despite the ridiculousness of making a Warcraft film, I'm kind of looking forward to it because he's involved. So, yeah, it's my hiccups with the project were more about the fact that there's less studio involvement and more the lack of any kind of the lack of a director who's got of creative people who have vision, who we know from what they've made in the past that they're good at coming up with a universe and with characters and stories and whatnot and bringing those to life rather than just pumping out something they think will make money.
Hmm. Yeah, exactly. What do you guys think? I know, Gary, that you're already kind of starting at a skeptical spot when it comes to these films of late, but...
Well, I had hopes for him, honestly, because they were heavily implying that, especially after the second movie, that we were going to settle in now. You know, this was the whiz bang, the introduction, the spin on the franchise, and we're going to move forward from there. We were promised that we were going to actually go into the 5-year mission now and start exploring and get out of some of the politics and some of the other things that we've been stuck in. Especially with the second film, and that we were going to start exploring again and hopefully meet new people, not retreads of old storylines. And so I was really optimistic. But as you said, with all these changes in direction and in production, as well as basically the minds behind the project now, I'm really concerned, and I'm trying not to typecast the new director, but I'm expecting a lot of flash, bam, boom now out of the next episode instead of the at least slightly thinking man's version that I was hoping that we would get some of this time around. So I'm very concerned. Of course, I'll probably go see it, see what they can do. But as I said, I do like a lot of the more cerebral Trek, and I was hoping after so much action that we'd get a little bit more of a thinking man's movie where at least, there's a moral vaguely hinted at, much like classic Star Trek, did so well. And now I don't think I'm going to get much of anything.
Are you kidding? It's going to be awesome when it turns out that Scotty's sidekick, when they go to his home planet, was mentored by a giant tree creature that raped the galaxy in his souped-up spaceship, and is also voiced by Vin Diesel.
No, you don't seem to understand. The sidekick is going to change into the tree.
Oh, yeah.
The Enterprise will have a blue and orange color scheme.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, it's going to go into silent mode, and it will change the light color.
Edmund, how about you?
Yeah, no, I mean, anytime there's this much churn in personnel, I mean, it always sends up warning signs to me. And certainly, I mean, one thing that just occurred to me, I also was not happy hearing that Justin Lin had been the choice given his past output. And there's just one thing I've been noticing in the watching trailers the last couple of weeks, just the number of films that just seem to be about explosions and people swinging from buildings and I do have this fear that we may be in for just more of that. Although the flippant side of me does wonder, given how much they were cleaving to bringing Khan back, and the fact that they had actually revived Kirk at the end of the second film this time, that perhaps what we're missing out on, thankfully, is Spock taking Kirk back to Iowa to rediscover his roots.
Hmm.
Rebuild the car.
Yes,
that's it. With Vin Diesel. That's right. He'll be doing double duty. But at any rate, yeah. We'll I guess we'll have to see where it goes from here. I think we were all hoping that Lin would not be the one to get the nod. But of course, as soon as that was announced, I was sure that we would have to discuss it. All right, we'll have to see where it goes from here. For all we know, this could wind up being perfectly fine. But yeah, I'm hoping. Edmund, don't worry. We all know that you're talking about the Insurgent trailer and how insipid that looked.
Yes. But anyway. Well, but that wasn't the only one. I mean, it was like there were basically five or six in a row where it was all.
Oh yeah, but that one, at least in my mind, was the one that jumps out as the look. Big explosions. Look.
Yes.
Lots and lots of CGI. Look, nothing close to a plot that you can figure out from what's going on. But anyway.
There's some really great Star Trek fan fiction coming out, though. You can download those.
I'm sure we could. Oh, yes, considering some of the films that are being made. Yes. We're going to go into our break as we ponder that little notion. And when we come back, we're going to see, do we delve into some movies? Do we delve into shows? We're just going to have to find out. So stay tuned. All right, so we are back, and I'm curious, guys, how many of you happened to see the miniseries Ascension?
I have, in fact, seen it.
Have seen it as well.
I did make it through to the end as well.
All right.
Enthusiasm for the world is just overwhelming. Calm down, guys.
Wait. Bronze Summit is an accurate recreation of half of the acting in Ascension. The complete lack of emotional, you know, connection to the audience.
So we're just going to launch right into it, huh?
Yeah, we are. We're going right into it. No need to really do much in terms of parsing it out episode by episode, because a little bit of background on this. Let's see, I open it up. We've got Ascension, the passengers of a starship on a century-long voyage to populate a new world begin to question the true nature of their covert mission when 50 years into their journey, which began in 1963, a young woman turns up dead of suspicious circumstances. So it started right around the same time as Doctor Who. Boy. Anyway. So that's the official recap. Here's what happened kind of in between the original announcement of this and where it ended up. It was originally supposed to be a 6-week miniseries that would spool out an episode roughly Thanksgiving through to the end of the year. And so it would be this kind of developing mystery. And, well, that's not how they did it. They wound up repackaging it into 3 2-hour blocks. I say 2 hour, and I'm actually making air quotes, because on one night it was only an hour and a half. On another night it was more like 2 hours. On another one it was more like an hour 45. It was weird when you condensed it, because some of them had more commercials than content, it seems, sometimes. But at any rate, they kind of condensed it into these 3 nights, and they ran those 3 nights, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, in 1 week. Which just tells me that either they didn't think that the show could sustain itself over a 6-week period and it needed to kind of spool out faster, or they felt like they needed to really just make it an event to really drum up interest in it. Regardless, they got what they wanted. We all watched it. So I guess my biggest problem here is, Edmund, you mentioned you saw it through to the end.
Yes.
There was an end?
Well, yeah. I, as those words were leaving my lips, I was like, you know, yeah, that isn't really accurate, since it wound up feeling like the longest cliffhanger pilot we've ever seen.
Yes. And yeah, in fact, of course, it's obvious that they want to make this into a series.
Yes.
And this was their way of kind of gauging interest. But anyway, go ahead, Bronstam.
So you guys know the concept of the elevator pitch, right? Like, it's what they tell writers. It's like, okay, you've got to be able to describe the premise, the core of a story, in the time it takes to get from one floor to where, from the ground floor to wherever the hell you're going in an elevator. So this version of the elevator pitch, clearly they got about 30 words into it and hit the emergency stop and wouldn't let whoever they were pitching to get off until they'd gone through their really, really rambled explanation. Because it seems the only thing that is very clear about Ascension, once you get to the end of it, is that the people making it really didn't know what they wanted to make the show about. Like, is it about the long con? Is it about the pioneer spirit? Is it about what happens when you put people in a bottle? It's like, there's the core of a lot of interesting ideas, but they're all mixed up in a really inelegant way, and there's never a sense of focus, which means that the story could never have come to a satisfactory conclusion, because we don't really care about anything, and the show never gives us a reason. It never gives us a cue to care about something, let alone a reason. And yeah, it's just you get to the end of it. It's just like, well, okay, that's 6 hours. I'm not getting back.
But the thing about it is that you could have easily taken two of those concepts, stuck with them, and it would have been a far superior show. The whole idea that there was this long con going on, and people on the ship were finding out about it, figuring it out, whatever the case might be, was one good hook. I mean, the end of the first night was actually, even if you kind of saw it coming, it still was very satisfying. I thought it was a good hook into the story. I know that it raised a lot of eyebrows of interest from a lot of people, but I never watched it.
We're at the end of the orientation. It's like, we've given you all the setup, and this is the last. This is the last piece that we need to put into place.
Yeah.
And then from here on, like, now we've set up this story, and from here on, we resolve this story. But instead of doing that, they just introduced more story.
Right, because if they just stuck with that and did a little bit of that whole society in a bottle thing, I think it would have been fine. The thing that got me was this whole creepy kid that is in some way, shape, or form, like... What was that even about?
They're trying to breed the Star Child?
That's when I spit my drink out. Right.
Yeah, it's like, okay, so the revolutionary, like, you know, visionary father who put this whole thing was like an Arthur C. Clarke fan on acid, or what the hell?
I don't know where to even begin with that. That's the problem, is that nothing in the story whatsoever indicates that they're doing anything special other than keeping this society kind of in isolation and under pressure to develop this ability. Nothing.
Yeah.
Zero.
And, which is what makes the final half of the last night so frustrating, because it has the air of, oh, now we're going to give you some answers. Now we're going to really kind of kick things in high gear and lay out a bunch of interesting stuff that half of it's either not set up, and the other half of it is just like we haven't known to give a toss about it up till now. It's just like, so what? By the end there, wait, he really wants to send these people to another planet? Like, it's a bit late in the game to be, you know, to be dropping that, or else, like, I've completely misinterpreted the very vague and completely unset up things that they talked about, which is, let's face it, also a really also a possibility.
Gary, add to this if you don't mind.
Oh, geez, I'm trying to think of where to start. You're right. There was a lot of good ideas and thoughts here, but they were mashed together. Maybe if they played them out over seasons, it might have worked. But it just it failed in so many ways. The acting aside, which I agree could have been better to begin with. I enjoyed the false premise storyline, and honestly, given the level of science there was in the 60s, I already figured that it was a fake premise, just because the technology I was seeing would not have been able to last these people through 50 years in space. So I figured that one out pretty early. The thing that threw me to this wind was the whole breeding the Star Child type of thing. And as I tried to fill it in, I suppose maybe those had something to do with the injections they were giving everybody every day. Maybe there was something in there and they were going to spool that out later for us, but never did. It just felt like there was no driving force to the story. We didn't really get anywhere. It was very frustrating. I enjoyed the twist where we did see the outside world. At first, I thought it was going to be a self-contained thing, so I enjoyed so many of the premises of it. But it's like taking a whole bunch of ingredients and mashing them together and not having it turn out to be anything good. I'm trying to think. I believed the onboard story, and I realized that they were driving home a little bit at the multiple different times they basically said that they didn't go through any of the bad part of the 60s or the awakening of the 60s or Woodstock or whatever you want to call the post-60s explosion.
Yeah, there's a real social time capsule going on, and it's really at the beginning of the first episode. I thought it was kind of subtle, the way that they start, like, you start meeting characters just like, the fashions are a bit interesting. Well, the way they talk is, hang on, wait a hot second. That's interesting. That time capsule aspect.
It's interesting, and yet I feel like they missed on two rather important notes. The first one being that even a society in isolation for 50 years is going to evolve in some way, shape, or form. And I feel like they strained a little bit the idea that they stuck to tradition so much. There wasn't a whole lot of indication that there had been any type of drift in their society. But the other side of it was that these seem to be some awfully well-adjusted folk, other than the lower deck versus upper deck thing, which I think it was kind of played out well. But it seemed awfully strange to me that the guy that was in charge of the investigation and had to deal with all these different strata of the society was, not to put it too indelicately, a black guy, which, if early 60s, that did not have nearly enough effect on the way that things played out as it needed to. I believe there was maybe one scene in the final episode where you got the kind of racial attack that you were kind of expecting right off the bat. But there were times when I was waiting for somebody to say something, especially on the upper deck part of society, and no one said or batted an eye or said a word. It was, wait a second, this does not seem reflective of the 60s at all. And yeah, I mean, maybe it's because we're supposed to believe that, you know, the people that went on the trip were, you know, specially selected, that, you know, a lot of them
just
were
super well adjusted.
Yeah, but even then, it seems like
they did give some teaser, like that so many smart, important people had disappeared or something like that during that time when they started the conspiracy angle of the show.
Yeah, which but, again, made no sense, but that's okay.
Yeah. And then one thing that struck me was, I mean, this is 50 years. There were no old people. There really weren't any old people on board that ship. And they made some references as, like, as life comes in, life goes out and stuff like that. So I was almost waiting for some sort of Logan's Run-ish type of culling of older people. Because it's 70 years. There still should have been somebody. You know, you would think over a course of 70 years there would be some older people other than the one politician, a few politicians. You really didn't see anybody left. What happened to all the hundreds of older people that would have been on this ship?
Yeah, and that's really, I mean, one of the biggest problems for me is here we are talking about all these things that could have been happening or that we're having to speculate about, and for a network that says they wanted to get back to hard science fiction, there wasn't enough of the real exploration of these concepts going on. Certainly for me, I mean, the whole twist in what became the first episode, or, you know, would have been the end of the second episode. Basically, I mean, I found annoying just because it was a situation where the ship's too big. They've got artificial gravity, and they're not even giving us just even a line or two of technical gobbledygook or something to explain how they're all walking around like normal. And of course then the instantaneous communications where back on Earth they know what's going on, which was probably the biggest red flag. So certainly it was no surprise when he falls onto the airbag. But then, I mean, even in terms of some of these other things, I mean actually what you just mentioned, Gary, is something I hadn't considered. But yeah, I mean that's a very nice twist that yes, on this mission, if you reach retirement age, that's when you go out the airlock to conserve resources because you're not doing anything meaningful for the mission anymore. that reflects on what John was saying. But you know, in terms of ways, you know, maybe that's not the way they started out, but that's the way the society developed as they went along. What it really wound up feeling like to me was, you know, if this ever did go to series, that it feel like it's going to be far more in the Helix vein of just throw stuff against the wall and see what falls off into that airbag again. But this certainly, given its premise, was not what I was expecting, and I certainly do hope it does not actually get picked up. But even the conspiracy angle, I mean, that was another thing that never really got explored. I mean, this idea that we did actually go to the moon, but people started getting wind of some faked mission because of little dribs and drabs that had gotten out about Ascension. So you know, yeah, I mean, this is a case of many, many good ideas that I think we've just demonstrated how the four of us could have developed them a little bit better than what we saw on screen.
It's never a good sign for any kind of story if you immediately start rewriting it in your head as you go through it and come up with something better.
Yes.
And not necessarily in the fanfic kind of way, but just in the sense of, well, structurally these things don't work so well, so if you rearrange them, that might be better. And these characters sort of like that you could do something more interesting with the dynamic, like real construction things.
Yeah, the other thing that I do want to point out, though, Edmund, you did say, oh, well, sci-fi wants to make a, you know, is saying that they want to make a change back to hard sci-fi and all that. That's true. But this, I'm sure, was greenlit and in production long before the purge of the upper ranks of sci-fi. This felt like something that was, they kind of picked this to kind of tout as a step in that direction, but clearly this was not something that was made in the kind of new mold. At least I'm really hoping that this was not like his pet project and he took over or something like that. Because this... At the same time, granted, the execution was poor. No, by no doubt. The concepts behind it, I have to give them at least this much. The stuff that they tried to rip off and meld together here is classic stuff. It just was not. It wasn't mashed up very well.
There's two separate premises there, and either one of them would have worked as a really great show. Whether it's the idea of the faked space mission or of the time capsule for this long term mission.
Oh, my pet favorite idea would have been that they were actually testing because the Earth was gonna have to evacuate. So, we didn't get to see that either.
Well. All of those things, like I said, having it all in one thing made sense because, again, by faking the space mission, then you're also kind of creating the ship in a bottle type of situation, which is fine. Okay, great. But then trying to do all that stuff on the outside, which quite frankly became a muddled distraction, and then also do this whole Star Child thing. Now, if they wanted to have a show that was all about trying to genetically engineer that and kind of like do a kind of melding of Herbert and Clark into one type of story, okay, but you wouldn't have needed that to have been mated to the fake space mission story at all. So it was trying to mash all this together, and like you said, Edmund, it's the Helix factor once again rearing its ugly head. And again, that's quote-unquote old sci-fi, midlife sci-fi, I don't know what you want to call it, previous sci-fi. We've got several generations of the channel at this point. Point is that it's I think both of those were announced at roughly the same time, so it makes a lot of sense to me that they're trying to that both of them end up being this grasping at straws type of situation, which we get to all see again when Helix comes back for its second season soon, by the way.
Yes.
So here's my question: do you think this, well, I'm not sure how it did in the ratings, but do you think a not so brilliant reaction to it, is that going to have a negative effect on this Siffy rebranding, course correction kind of thing that they've got going on?
What do you think, guys? That's a good question.
Well, I think it's a step in the right direction. I mean, considering if you go from the B movies that they were so running so famously for years and years to this, it's definitely an improvement in my book, and I can only hope that they continue to go that way. So I'm optimistic from this movie more so than pessimistic.
Would you want to see more?
Yes, I would like to see about two of the storylines pursued. just not the four to five that they brought in here.
Yeah.
More of some, yes.
Sorry, they're trying to weigh in over here.
Okay. Yeah, it's the fact that if it was put in development before this this rebranding got underway, it might not necessarily have a huge thing, but it's been talking about how it wants to go in a different direction, be truer to the brand of science fiction and stuff like that. But if their first big thing out of the gate, tanks, even if it wasn't necessarily developed under this whole initiative thing, it's going to give, it's going to give them serious pause. Like they kind of needed, I think they kind of needed this to succeed. I think the whole idea of a sci-fi channel that's about sci-fi, is going to be kind of, that idea is going to be hanging in the balance, I think, at this point. And if they get something else that tanks, then yeah, I think it's going to be wrestling a go-go.
That is the most horrifying way of putting it I think I've ever heard. Well, any other thoughts on Ascension before I believe we're getting kind of close to the end of the hour here?
The only thing I'll mention is, of course, particularly with Tricia Helfer on board as being the manipulative vixen again. There were people who were sort of talking about this as, who is this Siffy returning to Battlestar Galactica days? And certainly the only way I could see a comparison is since certainly the Battlestar Galactica miniseries was a much better product than this, but did have its detractors, and they did go back and retool when it went to series to some extent. All I can say is if they do pick it up, I hope they take a leaf from that book and listen to all these criticisms and do an even bigger retooling on this one.
That's a good point. On the subject of Battlestar, I kept waiting for Tricia Helfer and Ryan Robbins to have a wee referential scene.
Yeah, yes.
No, well, they did put her in a red dress, so, you know, there was that. Yes.
Are you alive?
I was waiting for the inevitable at the launch party, the karaoke rendition of All Along the Watchtower.
Yes.
It would have been equally out of place.
Yes.
All right, well, let's see. Gary, any last thoughts on your end?
It's I just have one comment on that whole, you know, shift or change. Yeah, they were too lockstep in with the 60s, like as if they were those actual people. Since they didn't turn out to be those actual people, there should have been some variance, even if they referenced a lot of the stuff or wanted to use that type of clothing or something. There should have been some slight variances or changes after 50 years. I really feel was a little bit of a cheap out to, you know, use probably period costumes that were on racks on shelves somewhere instead of changing things up at least a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and actually just one last thing that occurs to me in the realm of things we were rewriting as we went along, and I think this is something where if it had been spooling out more on a week to week and more like a season of a series, it did start occurring to me that the fact that this was 50 years in and essentially this was the second generation, whether one of the revelations would be that those first people on the ship, at least the upper ranks, were actually in on it, because that was the only way I could see that this would actually work in terms of having all these smart people who probably should be able to figure out that they're not really on a spaceship. But if the ones who first got on board, a lot of them did know and then could raise their children, basically, where they can completely mold their attitudes and scientific knowledge. No, that was kind of the only way I could see this experiment really working.
Well, all we can do is wait and see if this is getting the kind of reception that they wanted. I gather that it didn't, but because we haven't heard a peep about it since then. But we'll see. We'll find out.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time. Watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.